Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, Bob is replacing Bob, Toontown has an opening date, Mickey and Minnie turn 94 with celebrations at Disneyland.
Indy returns from a three-day refurb, 2023 celebrations. We finish our talk about our trip to Marceline and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Well, hello there. Welcome to our unbirthday party. For your safety, please be sure to stay listening with your hands, arms, feet, and ears inside the podcast. And please, do give Peg and Teresa easier trivia questions. Well, it seems DL Weekly is about to begin. Have a most wonderful time. Perhaps tea time.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of November 23rd, 2022. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Teg Bushman. Thank you to Leslie Yu for becoming an official weekly tier on our Patreon. Our supporters get some pretty fun perks like DL Weekly swag, bonus content, and access to our Discord community. A special thank you to Lynn B., Stephen Debbie W., Sarah E., and Mark and Allison G. for your continued support. If you'd like some more Disney magic in your day, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to join the community.
If you enjoy listening to the show, please consider rating and reviewing the show on your podcast app. It helps other Disney fans become weekly tiers and join the community.
Well, you've heard us talk about our great experiences staying at the Howard Johnson Anaheim. Well, we have partnered with them to offer our listeners some cool discounts. Weekly tiers can get 15% off their stay, and Magic Key Holder weekly tiers get 20% off. To take advantage of these discounts, head on over to dlweekly.net and click on the Howard Johnson logo. Be sure to use the promo codes on the site to get the discount that you qualify for.
Now, let's get to the news.
Well, the big news heard around the Disneyverse this week is the return of Bob Iger as the CEO of the Walt Disney Company, replacing Bob Chapek. This news happened Sunday evening while the stock market was closed. Bob Iger sent an email out to all employees of the company with more information to come. Once the market opened on Monday, the stock has risen 9%. Bob Chapek has left the company, and Bob Iger is expected to stay for just 2 years while he works to set someone else up to take over the company.
I don't even know where to begin with all of my thoughts on this. First of all, this seemed like, I think I was in shock for a while, because it seemed to kind of just be like, bam, like, here it is now. And I'm not saying that Bob Chapek was doing a great job. I'm not saying I thought he had a long time left with the company. I don't think any of that. But the fact that Iger was the one to be coming back, I think, was the most shocking part of it to me. I figured when Chapek would transition out, however and whenever that may be, that, you know, that he would just be replaced with whoever the next person was going to be.
Sure.
So not only the thing was shocking and surprising, but I think what really, like, threw me off kilter was that I honestly, when we first saw the news, I didn't believe it. Like, I thought it was like spam or like a joke or like not real. And then suddenly it was everywhere. All news sources were reporting on it, so I knew it was real. But it was just, yeah. So I was, it definitely took me by, like, yeah, I don't even know how to describe the feeling, but I was just like, what just happened?
Well, our supporter Discord chat was like that too. It was quite the topic of conversation.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of felt bad. One of our community managers was running a movie night, and in the midst of the movie night, suddenly this dropped, and all of the conversation went to this.
Yeah.
So, you know, feel kind of bad about that. But I am with you. I would have bet money that this would never have happened. I thought from all of the interviews that Bob Iger has done since he left the company that he was not coming back. He was done. Like, he was just going to retire.
Enjoy retirement.
And enjoy time with his family and, you know, doing some things with some other organizations. He's been pretty open about his time at the Disney company and some of the decision making. There's some great interviews out there if you go look for him. I think the Walt Mossberg and I can't remember who's he's with off the top of my head, but they did a sit down, him and I think Kara Swisher is what it was, sat down and like interviewed him and talked about streaming and everything. And it was about a 45-minute interview, and I listened to it a couple months ago, and I thought it was really good to kind of get some insight on Disney Plus and everything. But I never thought that he was coming back. You know, it's been reported in the news that he thought that Chapek wasn't handling things the way that maybe he thought he should. And, you know, there's been a lot of stuff with Chapek that's just unfortunate. I think part of me, I like Bob Iger, and this is going to get us removed from any media list that we're ever possibly going to be on. But I kind of feel like, in a way, like I like Iger, but I think he's a smart businessman. And so I think what happened is he bought 20th Century Fox, spent $1 jillion on it. And then the pandemic was starting and they had already closed Shanghai. And I think he was like, oh, this is a great opportunity. Here you go, Bob. You can have the company and take care of the fact that there's all this debt from 20th Century Fox and the fact that the parks and stuff were going to close and the pandemic and everything. And now that that's kind of over with and everybody's blamed all that stuff on Chapek, I feel like it's like, okay, cool. I can come back and be the savior and make myself look good. And not that like he's a bad CEO. I just think like the timing is suspicious and everything. I'm happy that he's coming back. I don't think, one of the things I think a lot of people think is that, oh, he's coming back. GD Plus is going to go away and we're going to fix lightning lanes. And like all this stuff's going to get better, reservations. But I don't think he's going to fix any of that. The segment that the stock market cares about right now is the streaming and media part. And he's already announced that they are going to restructure that section of the company. And so I think that's what he's there to fix.
They've already started to restructure that because on Monday they had announced that one of the top people from that division was leaving the company as well. But yeah, so I've got, how do I want to say this? Part of my heart does go out for Bob Chapek. I think it's a lot of stuff that was happening that maybe wasn't specifically him. It was very easy to point fingers and blame at him. Did he make he made mistakes. Don't get me wrong. He was not perfect. He definitely made mistakes. But I think there was a lot of stuff kind of pinned on him that wasn't necessarily him. For example, Genie and Genie Plus was actually like came up with and designed and created when Bob Iger was there. However, it was implemented when Chapek was there. So a lot of people blame Genie on Chapek when that was in motion before he took over, kind of thing. And I think some of the other decisions that have been, that have had happened, would have happened regardless who was the CEO at the time. It would have happened if Iger was there. It happened when Chapek, you know, that sort of thing. So I do think there was stuff that really wasn't necessarily his thing. Now, like I said, he's made his own mistakes. Let's be real. The one thing that he never had going for him that Bob Iger really does have going for him is he's much more personable. Yes. Iger is much more personable, much more charismatic. He's got a great way with words. I think he's a really good, really strong leader. People just are naturally kind of drawn to him and want to like follow where he's leading. So he's going to gain a lot of support. And I think the company needs that right now because there's been a lot of not good feelings and just things that have come out now after this transition. Simple things like people said, you know, Bob Chapek never actually came around and introduced himself to like different departments and stuff like that, where Iger was trying to make sure that he was getting to know the people and just stuff like that, you know. So it sounded like Chapek was a little bit more hidden, whereas Bob Iger is kind of more out and with the people. So I do think morale is definitely going to get the biggest boost overall. Do I hope the company is going to get put back on the right track and that we're going back in the direction that I think we should be going? Of course. I do think some of that's going to happen, though, because we have this interview and these quotes linked in the show notes, of course. But some of the things that I am the most excited about that I've seen for quotes were basically Iger saying, I fundamentally believe that storytelling is what fuels this company and it belongs at the center of how we organize our businesses. Stuff like that. So I feel like the creatives are going to be more in control now versus with Chapek, since he was a finance guy, it was more financially driven. So I'm happy that we're hopefully going to be more creative focused and understand that the finances will come if we stay true to what's, you know, at the heart of Disney, which is the creativity.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I think that Disney, we've talked about this a number of times, Disney does the best when there is somebody who is running the creative side and somebody who's running the business side. Mm-hmm. And Chapek was definitely, I think, a business side person.
Yeah.
One thing that...
And that was, you know, that was a choice that Disney made at that time. And that was the direction they were wanting to focus on.
Did
it work? Not so
well. and I think Iger is... The thing with Iger is he's not necessarily the most creative either, but he's very good at listening to the creative people and taking guidance from that. So where the vibe I got I don't know. I don't have any personal experience with him, but the vibe I got from Chapek was that he didn't really care about the creativity because all he cared about was like numbers. Like that was his focus. And that's what that's where his strengths are, yeah, is with financial stuff. And so I just worry that you can't have that. So,
no, and you can't also have somebody that's only creative. You need the balance.
Yeah.
So with Iger, yeah, we have the balance better in one person versus, you know, the original Walt and Roy. You had your creative, you had your financial, and then the next kind of generation of that was Michael Eisner and Frank Wells.
Right. Well, and the other thing that is sad to me is the stock market is kind of unfairly treating the Disney company at the moment, because basically, in a nutshell, Netflix announced some earnings reports a while ago and they had kind of leveled off with some subscribers and, like, you know, they're, you know, they hadn't done wonderful. So up until now, the stock market has wanted streaming companies, which Disney is now involved with. All they cared about was subscriber growth, subscriber growth, subscriber growth, subscriber growth. So get more subs. It doesn't matter how much it costs. Doesn't matter if they make money. It just needs to have more subscribers. Well, now the stock market is saying, we don't really care about the subscriber growth. We care about the money. And so that kind of put all of the streaming services in a pickle, because they were trying to do the one thing, which is they wanted subscriber growth. So they were spending outrageous amounts of money to try to lure people to subscribe to get those, yeah, numbers up and to keep them. That's the important thing, is keeping the subscribers. Mm-hmm. And so you got to keep coming out with more content. Otherwise, you get like an HBO thing where what happens is, you know, Game of Thrones come out, people subscribe, they watch Game of, yeah, Thrones, and then they cancel. And they don't want that. They want people to stay. And so that was the big thing. Well, now they want these companies to make money. So now they're going to have to cut back maybe on Disney Plus stuff. It's still very important. It's still going to be very successful, but they've got to cut back on spending so much on that. And of course, like, the parks always make money. So I don't know. I don't think this means a lot for the parks, to be honest. I think the focus is going to be on the entertainment division, because, mm-hmm, that seems to be where the stock market cares right now.
I do hope, since we are listening to creatives again, I do hope that at the very least for the parks, that they're going to be spending a little bit more and giving a little bit more TLC to the attractions that have been working so hard and tirelessly with very little downtime, I guess would be a good way of saying it, as far as like refurb downtime.
Right.
And they desperately need it. So I'm hoping that at the very least they can bring the show quality back up to what it had been pre-pandemic. I'm not saying we need all new attractions.
No.
Of course we want new attractions, new land, all the new stuff. But I think it would speak volumes to the fans if they took a little bit more time to just show the parks a little more TLC and bring the show quality back up to what we're used to. You know, we could go on forever going on with this, but overall, we're excited for the change. I do think with Iger, it's just a big morality boost. Whether or not it's going to see tons of massive changes or not, I don't know. But at the very least, he just has a better like feeling overall.
Yeah.
He's just more charismatic and just a more personal type of, yeah, guy. I will leave us on this one last quote just to kind of sum up some of the stuff that Iger has said since he was reinstated. But so this is, again, talking about specifically it was Disney media and entertainment distribution, but I think that this is going to hopefully echo throughout the entire company. So the quote basically was, "We're going to work together on the design of a new structure that puts more decision making back into the hands of our creative teams and rationalizes costs. And this will necessitate reorganization." Da, 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 da. But so the big thing to me there was
back in the hands of creative teams,
but we're also, you know, and we're rationalizing,
right,
costs. So it's not like go ham, do whatever you want, but basically we're going to start talking to the creative teams and then talk to the financial teams.
Yeah.
Whereas before we had been talking to the financial teams and then presenting to the creative,
yeah,
teams.
Yeah.
So that's back on the right track.
Somebody in our chat, I just wanted to talk about this because I totally agree with this position, because we talk about the parks, right? We care about the parks.
Oh,
this,
yeah,
is a Disneyland podcast. And I said it's interesting because, so the quote here from one of our weekly tiers was, "We're certainly a hard to please group in many ways. We want the parks to be super affordable, but also free of crowds. We want there to be no reservations, but also unlimited magic keys. We want new attractions and updates to old attractions, but also don't want anything changed." And I think that's the case. I think, mm-hmm, that we want all of these things, but they all can't, they're all opposed to each other in, yeah, like the thought. You can't have both. So it's just really interesting to me of,
but
like, yep, that's kind of how it is.
It's finding the balance of all those things.
And
though,
it sounds
which is a tricky, tricky thing to do.
Iger's trying to do a good job of that.
Well, in other big Disney news, we have an opening date for Mickey's Toontown. The land will reopen on March 8th, a little over a month after Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway is scheduled to open on January 27th. As a recap, we can expect to see an updated Goofy's house with interactive playground for kids, a new spot for Donald's boat playground equipment and video portholes, a rethemed Gadgets Go Coaster, which is now focusing on Chip and Dale, and the return of Mickey and Minnie's house's Roger Rabbit's cartoon spin, in addition to dining options at Cafe Daisy and Good Boy Grocers. No Pluto's Doghouse?
I know. I was just going to say, I'm so sad. I love Pluto's Doghouse.
I like, that's breaking news right there. I didn't know that Pluto's Doghouse got sent outside. I don't know what the pun is.
Put out to pasture? Something like that. Whatever.
I was going to say get sent to the doghouse, but it was Pluto's doghouse, so that doesn't work. Poor Pluto.
I'm excited. I mean, this is not far away, March 8th, not too far after Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. I'm excited to see all of these changes. Toontown, we've talked about this so many times, but Toontown has been in such need for a renovation, and I'm so glad that it's getting one, because it's just, I remember recently on the last trips when it was open, we would go to hit the, Mickey's house, Roger Rabbit, and then we'd leave. We wouldn't spend any time in there. It wasn't very pleasant. So it's very cool that that this is coming so soon, and hopefully for our summer trip that we're planning, we'll be there to check it out.
The one thing that I'm just still so happy, because you just reminded me, back to those times, there was a good while that I kind of didn't think Toontown was going to be long for Disneyland, and thought it was going to go the way of Walt Disney World's Toontown and go move into Yesterland, and that space would be utilized for something else. So when they announced Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway, that was kind of nope, it's staying. And so I was so happy that not only is it getting a brand new big attraction, that it wasn't just we're gonna touch up the paint and make it look nice. No, they're revamping the whole area. So it's really exciting to see, to see it all kind of come together. I still don't understand. It seems like it's March 8th doesn't seem that far away, because the last aerial photos we've seen and shared with everyone, it was dirt. So that's a lot. They've got a lot of work cut out for themselves in the next couple of months, but we're excited to see it.
Yeah, they got 4.5 months, so we'll see what they can do. We heard this announcement this past Friday as the park celebrated Mickey and Minnie's 94th birthday with special buttons handed out at the main entrance and a birthday cavalcade down Main Street. The parade featured the Dapper Dans leading sing-alongs from the omnibus, the Disneyland band playing Happy Birthday with a bunch of characters, and Mickey and Minnie as the guests of honor before the cavalcade ends with a giant birthday cake for the pair.
A giant, birthday cake, float thing. It wasn't, an actual real cake. It was very cute, though. It was very Toontastic, if you will, because it looked like a cake that would have been, baked in Toontown or seen in a cartoon. You're going to think I'm so ridiculous. The thing that I was the most excited about with this was they were passing out buttons. Remember, pre-COVID, it would be an attraction's big anniversary, something. They used to do these guest buttons for these kind of events way more often. But since the reopening, if they've done it, it's been incredibly few and far between that I can't even remember the other things that they had done it for. So that was what I was over the moon giddy about, was that it was the return of the celebration button for whatever that specific day was marking. So we had seen them for Alice in Wonderland's anniversary, or whatever. So ridiculous, I know, but that's what I was the most excited about.
That's something you get to keep afterwards. It's not something that you just get to go see and be done with. So it's really nice that you you get a little keepsake included with your day at the park. But yeah, I mean, it looks cute. Cavalcades are okay. They're short. They're quick. But for something this, like a one day thing, why not?
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of short and sweet, Indy is back open after its 3-day refurb, but it's of course not what we were hoping. Mice Chat said many of its major effects are still not working and it's in desperate need of a rumored major overhaul. Meanwhile, in DCA, Monsters Inc., Mike and Sully to the Rescue opened up over the weekend with updated black light effects, fixed projection effects, and some new safety features. The outside also got a fresh coat of paint, and the monsters themselves even got a little bit of a new look.
On the outside.
The outside, yes. Sorry, we should clarify. The outside monsters, not the figures inside.
Gotcha. I still am not sure what took so long for them to repaint the outside of this, because I feel like it was up there forever.
They redid the monsters.
Yeah, but
I don't know.
It just was a long time. That's all I'm saying. I can tell from Weekly Tier, there was a Weekly Tier who worked this attraction. And one of the things that was commonly coming up was them having to do stops because of things falling out. And mm-hmm. so that's what the safety features seem to be implemented are, which is awesome.
Yeah.
The pictures I saw online, the lighting does look really good.
It does. I'm really... So we're going to focus on Monsters, Inc. because that was the positive bit of news here. Yes,
Indy's still in the same spot.
Indy went under a 3-day refurb. However, it was not show specific refurbs that happened. So
I wonder what happened. Maybe
they did some fixing with, you know, how the cars would like leak the oil and whatever, the hydraulic fluid. Maybe it had something to do with ride mechanics, I think. Sure. So there's not really much for us to report on there because we're not entirely sure what it was that was refurbed in that 3 days. But back to Monsters, Inc., back to the good news. Yeah, no, the lighting, sometimes it's hard to tell with photos, but they were just so, it did. It looks so much crisper. I'm excited to see it in person. I have mixed feelings on the stylized versions of the characters that they now have on the facade of the building.
Sure.
Some of the characters I like, but other ones almost don't look right. Like Sully's the one that's throwing me off the most.
Really? I thought Boo was the one that got the most for me.
Boo was fine. Sully, he's not, yeah. I don't know what it is that's so off about how Sully looks now, but he was the one that looked the most not like himself to me.
I mean, I guess he looks a little weird, but like I said, I thought Boo looked the weirdest because she has these crazy, it's almost like the eyes that Jesse has on Jesse's Critter Carousel, sure. Where she's like, yeah, not necessarily a fan of that, but
of course Roz was my favorite. Stephanie, he is blue and purple. We'll put a photo in there. He looks like he's got crazy eyes too. But the exterior, the doors and everything look so bright, so vibrant. I love the pops of color. Not even pop of color. I love the wall of color.
Yeah, it's nice. I kind of wish if they're going to keep this attraction around, because I know there's rumors that like Marvel's going to kind of take over this section. If they're going to keep this attraction around, I feel like they should create a new facade that's like more 3D and more dimensional than kind of like a painted, layered, you know what I mean?
It's interesting. I think we touched on this when we talked about Superstar Limo, but this is the Superstar Limo facade that they just repainted and reused. I think it was a very creative thing to do, but I see what you're saying. Yeah, invest in it a little bit more, especially since it's been Mike and Sully for quite a while. Definitely longer than Superstar Limo was around. That doesn't take much.
Well, Magic Keys were back on sale at Disneyland for a brief time this week. All keys except the Enchant level were open for new sales. Not long after, the Believe Key was sold out, and the others followed a little bit later. Magic Key sales are closed for now. Disney utilized the online queue for new sales like they've done in the past. More than an hour, which I think I saw reports.
Oh, it was
there were
wild.
Like 20 hours or something
it
that
was
people were waiting.
Crazy how long people were having to wait in this queue. I mean, just I feel for everyone that had to wait. And then there were folks that waited for hours and hours and hours that by the time they got in, the key that they wanted was gone. So this was a mess. This was a cluster. I don't really understand why they opened it up if they really truly didn't have that many passes, because it sold out in a day? So I'm not saying that there weren't lots of people trying to get those passes and it wasn't quote unquote lots of passes, but they know that there's high demand for these passes. So I feel like you have to have a substantial amount available if you're going to open up the sales, because this is almost like teasing people a little bit, like, I'm going to put this carrot right in front of you and dangle it right here. Oh, nope. Sorry. It's gone. So I know this wasn't a mistake, but part of me almost felt like, did they mean to make this live for people to go in and buy these? Because it was, as soon as it was open, it felt like it was closed and sold out. So I felt so bad for all of the fans that were trying to purchase keys at this time. But I also felt very bad for all of the cast members that were having to kind of navigate and help fans with this. Because people get very, you know, I don't want to say emotional, but it's very stressful. And so sometimes, well, a lot of times that stress can then carry over and kind of go on to the cast member that's trying to help, and they unfortunately have their hands tied too, so it's just not a good situation. So I was disappointed with this.
Yeah, it's just so funny because I feel like with all of these online queues and all this stuff, I feel like we've created these weird situations that never, like, when passes were for sale before, like, there wasn't the madness of this. People would just go to the park and buy a pass. Yeah. It wasn't a big deal.
Well, they weren't limited before is the other thing, too.
Or yeah, but you also couldn't buy them online way back in the day. That's true. Like maybe they should just have sales open at the park or something. I know that leaves some people out of it.
That leaves us out of it.
Yeah, but we already have ours.
But we wouldn't have gotten ours if it wasn't for online sales.
That's why we book a plane ticket. We fly out there, get our tickets.
That's a little ridiculous. But yes, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
But
I just feel like the more you add these like limited things, the more people are crazy to try to get them, which causes like even more demand. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there is demand because there is demand.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, for sure.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, that's like how I feel about like dining reservations.
Yeah.
People just kind of have a mad dash to book a dining reservation because you have to do it so far out, otherwise you can't get it.
Yeah.
That when it comes to the day, do you actually want to eat at that restaurant anymore? Or are you just eating there because you got this crazy hard to get reservation and you don't want to pass it up?
Right.
It's just, yeah.
Yeah, I miss the days of the Disney Wins and you could just walk into any place on except for something like the Blue Bayou and kind of get seated.
You know what I wish they would have done? If I was in charge of the universe and if I would have been in charge of this magic hero lot.
If you changed your name to Bob and you became the third Bob.
Yep, if I was the third Bob. What would have been nice to do is if they could have, I don't know how you would have done this, but if you could have opened this up so that family members who need passes for maybe kids that are now old enough that didn't need a pass that now have reached that 3-year-old threshold that need a pass. If somehow the sales could have been opened up for more of like special circumstance type things. I don't know how you would define that. The big thing that comes to mind to me are all the parents of the kids that were too young for the pass and now they're too old and need the pass, but you can't get a pass because the sales are closed. That's just a really hairy situation to be in. So, yeah.
I would say I wish Disney would look at it and decide if, you know, and they'd handle it like on a case-by-case basis. But I also feel like there's so many people out there that would try to find loopholes to getting all types of stuff. And that's just going to cause more of a headache. Yeah. So it's kind of unfortunate.
Well, Disneyland is adapting Disney World's latest cancellation policy for dining reservations. That means reservations may be canceled at least 2 hours prior to avoid a $10 per person cancellation fee. Previously, it was 24 hours before your dining window or your dining time. The Disney Food Blog reports Disney saying that this does not apply to Downtown Disney District restaurants, World of Color Dessert Party, the Princess Breakfast Adventure at Napa Rose, and Tomorrowland Skyline Terrace. So those are kind of the more
premium.
Yeah, more
event.
They're more
dining.
Like they're, I was going to say they're, yes, but then also there's a little bit more to it. It's more of an event than just
having lunch somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, because I'm surprised that, like, Fantasmic dining reservations weren't included in that. But I'm sure they always have walk-up demand for those, so they're going to fill those seats.
I was
going to
say, isn't the Fantasmic stuff, isn't that the deal right now, that basically there isn't a dining? You walk up and you say, I'd like to...
For some of them,
for
yeah.
some of it, yeah.
For some of them, yeah. And then that's another good point, too. Some of those things, like the dessert package for World of Color, you actually pay for in advance.
Right.
So having to cancel that with two... I don't know what the cancel... What the I think that's a different cancellation policy altogether. I've not looked into it because that's not something we've experienced.
Yeah. I guess that's nice because, like, things come up and maybe you have a reservation and then you realize, like you were saying, a couple hours ahead of time. I mean, there's, like, all these things, you know, there's going to be people that want to stand by and get this, you know, mm-hmm. so there'll be some things that open. But I don't know, all this reservation stuff. Well, we're not even past Thanksgiving in the United States, but Disney is already thinking of the Lunar New Year and the California Food and Wine Festival. In 2023, the Lunar New Year is starting on January 20th and running through February 15th. For 2023, it is the Year of the Rabbit for Chinese New Year, which symbolizes luck. But the Vietnamese New Year is the Year of the Cat. Two new Lunar New Year marketplaces are arriving this year, Bamboo Blessings and Wrapped with Love. The Food and Wine Festival run from March 3rd through April 25th. With the Food and Wine Festival, Soared Over California will also return once again.
I mean, really, that's the big news, everybody.
They should just bring it back.
It's interesting to me that that's become a yearly thing, that every year for Food and Wine Festival, they bring back Soared Over California. I say, why not do the best of both worlds. Put one in each of the theaters / hangars.
Yep.
Because there's two. So yeah, just have both of them playing year round and then people can choose which experience they'd like to do. And you know what? I'd ride it twice because it's two different things.
That's true. That's true.
So anyways, I'm very excited. I think Lunar New Year is one of the last special events, if not maybe the last special event at the resorts that we have not experienced. Mm-hmm. And it looks like so much fun. So it's definitely on my list to experience one of these days.
So just like in previous years, Mulan's Lunar New Year procession will be there, which is a performance hosted by Mulan and Mushu that features parade performers and everything like that. For this year, this upcoming year, the procession will be extended through all of DCA along the parade route from Paradise Gardens through Hollywoodland, because this used to just be limited over there. The culinary landscape, we already talked about that.
Hurry Home Lunar New Year Celebration is also returning, and this is a show that's presented just before World of Color, but basically heartwarming nighttime water show that tells the tale of a little lantern's quest to reunite with family for the annual celebration. This is, I know we're reporting that this is returning. I don't know if I knew about this.
Talked about it once.
I'm going to have to look this. I'm sure there's a YouTube video that exists. I'm going to have to look this up.
And then starting January 20th, Raya from the Disney film Raya and the Last Dragon will also be in a meet and greet on the Rubber Creek Challenge Trail. And then you may encounter Heroic Raya greeting new friends visiting the newly reunited.
Yay!
And then for the Food and Wine Festival, a lot of the same stuff from before.
Tons of fun at the Food and Wine Festival. I can't even let my brain go there just yet, because with both of these two festivals comes all sorts of amazing, yummy foods as well. And I still haven't wrapped my head around all of the holiday foods and the festival of the holiday foods that are going on at the resort right now. So I just can't wait.
I'm so glad that you found the checklist of foods and posted that in our supporter chat.
It was bad. I put the one that was just the holiday foods.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, what, 2 pages for Disneyland and 3 pages for DCA? And I about fell over. I'm like, it seems like a lot when you're looking at the foodie guide, but to see it laid out like this.
7 pages of foodie locations for just the regular Disneyland food. That's not the Festival of the Holidays. That's just all the other holiday food.
So, and for those of you interested in finding these checklists, I actually got them. I follow Gothic Rosie on Facebook, and she had put these amazing location and price guides together. So not only is it, here's your little checklist, I appreciated that she included all the pricing on them too. I thought that was a really nice touch.
She spends so much time on these things.
It's amazing.
Like, she always has these things. And how does she get all this info? She must just...
Disney magic tag. It's Disney magic.
Yeah.
Well, a week after the rest of the resort, the holidays have now arrived at Downtown Disney and at the resort hotels. Trees, nutcrackers, snowmen, and more line the streets of the shopping district. Inside the hotels, you'll find the annual staples, the gingerbread house and giant tree in the Grand Californian lobby, mid-century modern decor adorns the Disneyland Hotel, and special themed trees for each of the towers. I thought that was so cool. Though Mice Chat is reporting a rumor that the style of holiday decorations might go away next year. That's the mid-century modern decor in the Disneyland Hotel. I hope that's a rumor that's not true.
That's nice looking from the pictures I saw.
It's so cool. We're gonna have to go over there and check it out. But so the Frontier Land Tower has a frontier themed tree.
Sure.
And the Adventureland Tower has an adventure themed, like Adventureland themed tree. Thought that was so fun.
And the Fantasy Tower?
Oh, that has, that's where the mid-century modern decor is.
Okay.
But there's also a kind of like a, I'm going to call it a like a tiki themed tree. Yes, it's kind of Adventurelandy, but it's like more like tiki themed, like a Trader Sam's themed tree or something. Very, very cool.
Yeah.
There's also, like garland around Trader Sam's sign, all sorts of cool, fun, festive things.
I just love that the entire resort is just decked out in Christmas stuff or holiday decorations. So on November 18th, The Mandalorian and Grogu landed in Star Wars Galaxy's Edge in Disneyland. The duo greeted guests and even interacted with Boba Fett in the land. They should be out and greeting guests once every 30 minutes or so. No news on how long they'll be visiting Batuu, so if you're interested in meeting them, get to the park soon.
This was wild. Did you see photos or video of the day?
I saw video.
Of the day, and it may have been, I don't know if it was the first appearance or the entire,
there was cheering.
The streets of Batuu were full. So full. Like, there were, I've never seen so many people. It looked like you would have thought there was a parade or something going to go through there. There was so many people lined up and waiting. There was just so much excitement to meet probably Grogu. Yes, we love Mando, but come on, Grogu. Look how he's just so cute. He's so, for those of you that didn't see, they did introduce or present this new character during the D23 Expo this year. And it's Mando in his full Mandalorian suit, but he's carrying Grogu in kind of like this sling side pack thing. And Grogu is a little animatronic. So he and Mando look like they're having
magic spoilers.
Oh, yes. Yeah, sorry. So it looks like they're having like conversations. He makes sounds and kind of moves around. And it looks like he's, you know, interacting with the guests and also the Mandalorian. I think it's just so cool. He looks adorable, but you cannot reach out and touch Grogu. Oh. Mando is very protective of him.
Oh, I'm sure. That's amazing. Yeah, I like it. Totally unrelated, but sort of tangentially related. I just want to share this. So I saw this video on Instagram the other day. There was a guy dressed in a full Mandalorian suit at a Lego store, and somebody filmed him, and the caption was, "When you go to get a Lego Razor Crest, which is Mandalorian's ship, and all they have is the Luke speeder," because he's standing in line like waiting, and he picks up the speeder and kind of looks at it like, ugh. I don't know. Just thought it was funny. It was a great looking costume, though. But I'm excited to see Mando in person. I think that would be really cool. Hopefully he's still around by the time we get there.
I think he will be. I've got a good feeling about it. This past week featured Life Day, the holiday celebration in Star Wars universe. You can get a taste of the holiday-inspired dishes back in Galaxy's Edge. At Docking Bay 7, you can find Trandoshan-style pasta with braised bantha, which is a braised beef over cavatelli pasta with veggies, a zesty avocado sauce, and a balsamic glaze. We've heard it's a bit spicy. Or there's also a yob shrimp mix stew with swamp grains. Ooh. Another spicy dish which features shrimp, sausage, veggies, and rice with a tomato curry sauce.
I'm so sad because I love all of these things at Docking Bay 7, but I don't like the fact that both of these are spicy.
I'm sold. Even though it looks otherworldly, I'm very, very intrigued and very interested in trying the Trandoshan style pasta. That's the one with braised bantha and the balsamic glaze. The green sauce is throwing me off a bit, but it sounds really yummy.
Yeah, the green sauce is a little strange. This yob shrimp mixed stew with swamp grains looks pretty good. I love these bowls that they put in. I don't know. I don't think we haven't really had anything that wasn't good from Docking Bay 7, have we? I mean, we haven't tried everything on the menu.
No, they have really good food back there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look because there was somewhere I saw that there was a drink and like a hand pie type thing. Where did I see that?
Yeah, what happened to all the hand pies? For a while, there was like hand pie,
hand
pie, hand pie.
They're all over the place still. They're all over. The focus has just shifted to pretzels now, Tig.
Sorry, I've got to try to keep up through all of Disney's whims.
So over at Ronto Roasters, there's also a Destrin Ice Cap, which is a drink made with Sprite, green apple syrup, and topped with sweet cream cheese.
What's it called?
Destrin Ice Cap. And then over at Kat Ska's Kettle, they have a Jakuin corn and chili cheese pie, which is made with roasted poblano pepper, corn mozzarella, and comes with a citrus dipping sauce. Yum. I'm curious. I'm not excited about the drink, but I'm curious about the drink. It looks interesting. It
does look interesting.
And I see
it comes with a glow orb, so you know.
You can get it with or without the glow cobe, yes. But yeah, I'm just have a weird curiosity. This is not something that as soon as I read it, I'm like, ooh, yeah, I need to try that.
Yeah,
but I can't wrap my head around it, so I want to try it because I genuinely don't know what to expect from that drink.
You didn't have it as a separate news item, so I figured you weren't that excited about it because usually you'll be like, this new drink!
Not one of my top must tries, but I'm curious about it.
Guests who shop early and want to grab their merch on the way out of the park instead of carrying it will now find it at the Disneyland Merchants Guild, located in the former guided tour building next to Disneyland's City Hall.
I think this is a fun service. I'm not sure if it's something I will always remember and utilize because I'll probably forget about it. But I think it's great because how many times have you and I had to purchase a locker because of merch that we didn't want it, that we purchased. That
don't
we didn't
say that
wanna...
too loud. Disneyland's going to be like, oh, we're losing.
Oh, I'm sure they know that that happens. But you know how what it's such a great service. So it's just one of those things that since it's new, we'll have to remember exists. But I think it's a great service. I also think it's a good utilization of a building that I don't know if there was recently too much going on in that space. So I think it's a good use of space as well.
Yeah, I'm trying to look at the street view because I knew that there, like, I guess I never paid attention to this building over there.
Mm-hmm. It's the building.
It didn't have a sign on it before.
Yeah, the building's
all
right next to City Hall, and it's in between City Hall and, like, the tour gardens.
Yeah, because I was going to say, because I knew that the tour gardens was back here because it's got the little pagoda thing or whatever. I guess I never, we've walked by this a jillion times, and I guess I never noticed this building was even here.
It's one of those things I figured it was backstage and that the door and the steps up to it were just kind of a facade and not necessarily usable. So it's interesting because I've never had to do anything with that building before.
Yeah, it's just weird. Anyway, yeah, I wonder what that... used, I guess, tours at some point.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like they've trimmed the trees back or something.
Well, no, that's spring. You're looking at the flowering trees versus the winter trees.
That's a cool feature, though.
DO Weekly announces the boarding of the Trivia Express, nonstop star speeder service to the moon of Endor. All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
Hello and welcome to Trivia Land. How are you two doing tonight?
I mean,
just never know what to think coming into Trivia Land.
Well, I asked producer James earlier. I said, "How good are we for tonight?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Great."
Yeah, yeah. I never know. You never know what you're gonna. It's like a box of chocolates. You just never know what you're gonna get.
I don't think that's a Disney property.
Not yet. Maybe.
Was it a Fox property? No, I gotta look this up. Anyway, you can continue.
Great. Well, in the interest of the holiday season being spread throughout the resort, I figured we'd do some holiday-themed questions about the park.
Okay.
So, we're going to start with question number one. Which tree is taller, the one on Main Street or the one on Buena Vista Street?
Ooh.
I think the one on Main Street is taller.
I was going to say Buena Vista, because that one looks... Yeah, I'm going to say... Okay, we're going to split on this one.
Okay, well, one of us will be right.
It's a good way to go about it.
By the way, real-time follow-up, Paramount was Forrest Gump.
You know, you say one of you may be right, but this might be a trick question. They might be the same.
Ooh. Oh! See, he trick questions us. We don't even have the chance.
We're just...
It's never fair. Question number two from listener Donna S. How many poinsettia and other holiday plants are around the Disneyland Resort when they decorate for the holidays? Around the resort.
Oh, man.
What did you say, poinsettias and what?
Other holiday plants.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. 10,000.
That's it? I was going to say way more than that because I'm thinking about just like how many are in the Mickey?
Wait, we got this question about the plants for the Mickey, how many plants was that?
I don't remember.
Ballpark.
I don't remember. I'm bad at these ones.
Okay, fine. 100,000.
Okay.
1 million.
I feel like that's too high. So which one are you going with?
I'm going to go
with
100. 80,000.
Okay.
Another answer.
Option number three. I think I'm going to go. I think I'm going to go with 50,000.
Ooh, $1.
What? One plant. There's only one plant in the entire Disneyland resort. One holiday plant.
Teresa, he did change his mind twice. Are you good with 50,000 or
good.
Just need to be sure.
Teresa, you're the one who usually changes your mind with
I know.
Maybe this, maybe that. So this time,
it's your turn.
Look at you go.
All right, my third question for you. What scent is pumped onto Main Street during the holidays?
Oh,
is it peppermint or gingerbread?
Not ginger. I don't think it's gingerbread because I think we've got gingerbread in the Haunted Mansion and we've got
peppermint.
Gingerbread in... That would make sense with the candy canes. Yeah, I'm going to say peppermint too.
Peppermint. Two peppermints.
I like your confidence, Teresa. Really selling that answer.
All I can... The only
too
one
bad
I,
it's wrong.
Yeah, the only one I know is that it's usually like... Oh, I'm going to change it. I'm going to say sugar cookies.
Sugar cookies? Okay.
Yep.
All right. Our last question.
I like Kate's answer in the chat. The scent of magic.
Magic.
But that's all the time, Kate.
That's year round. Yeah. All right. Our last question for you this week. And I felt like this was the one that, yeah, you're not going to get this, but I'm ready to be surprised. What is the name of the proprietor of Plaza Point, the Disneyland holiday shop, a place to get your fix for Christmas and other holidays all year round?
We talked about this.
I'm a terrible person. It's a female. I remember that.
Yep.
I don't remember what her name is, though. Holly. holiday. I don't know.
I like where you're going with that.
I don't know what her name is.
I don't either.
I'm impressed.
It's got
with
an exotic name too, doesn't it? Or am I crazy?
Yeah, it's not like something kitschy like Holly Holiday, like I just said.
I will give you that. It is not that kitschy.
It's not punny like that.
Do you have a hint?
It is inspired from a cast member's mother, as in is like legitimately their name.
Wow, that's
cool. Oh, that's right. I remember this story. Yeah.
I don't remember the name.
So Holly Holiday is probably not the right answer.
No,
but
no,
I'll still take it
from
you.
Oh gosh, it's like
Really like this is bad because I remember like talking about the name and talking about the story.
Yep.
And I remember liking the name too, but I cannot remember the name.
It is a great name.
I'm just gonna make up something and be like Genevieve something or other. I don't know.
It's better than Holly Holiday.
Yeah. Good luck spelling Genevieve.
Oh boy.
So your official answer is Genevieve something?
Just yeah, Genevieve something.
It's like Madonna. It's just one name.
Genevieve's.
my goodness.
Oh boy.
Well, my other answer was like Olga something, and I don't think it was
that's
Olga.
Olga's Cantina.
No, Olga. Olga.
With an L. I was like, that's Galaxy's Edge, sir.
It seems like we're starting the holiday spirit well here in Trivia Land, giving the gift of very challenging questions. Let's see how they did after our discussion topic this week.
Well, this week for our discussion topic, we are finishing up our discussion on our trip to Marceline. Enjoy.
I feel like we could go on and on and on about all the cool things we saw in the museum. Is there something that really stuck out to you that you wanted to talk about before we move on?
The only thing that I love models, and yes, a good chunk of the upper floor is a set of models that this gentleman...
It was so cool because this gentleman was just a fan. He was not anybody related to Disney. He didn't work for the Walt Disney Company. He was just a fan like us.
So he actually wrote to Walt and like asked about it because like he was making some models of like Main Street or something. And Walt actually, Dale Varner is what his name was. And in fact, there's a letter from Walt Disney to him in 1964 that said, "I have forwarded your letter to Disneyland. If there are any pictures available which will give you background that you'll need, I'm sure they'll be happy to send them to you. From the slides you have sent, which I'm returning, it looks like you're doing a good job. Something like this can be a very rewarding hobby. Keep up the good work." So they sent him blueprints and photos and stuff, and then he continued to build these models. So there's models of all of Main Street, the train station, the castle, the Matterhorn, New Orleans Square. Like, pretty cool. Pretty cool.
And these models are just made from things he found, like, around his house. If you took a really good look, you could see, like, oh, that's a, like, those are a bunch of little toothpicks. Or, like, mm-hmm. I mean, it was incredible. Really, really incredible.
I took a jillion photos of this just because I love building models, and I thought about it when I was a kid building models at Disneyland all the time, and this guy just went along and did it and donated it to the museum. So I thought it was really cool to see that somebody had put so much effort and time into that. And like the Haunted Mansion looks amazing as well.
They were so good. So good. Well, next on our tour we headed out to
Wait. I cannot leave without talking about how I have this photo of Teresa with, there's a piece of branch or log from the Dreaming Tree in the museum. And I went to take this picture of Teresa and she put her hand on it. You're allowed to put your hand on it. Mm-hmm. And it was not exactly the most sturdy. And so in this picture, I snapped it right when it moved and Teresa had this look of, oh God, I've damaged
panicking.
This thing.
I was so scared. I'm like, oh no, like don't, please don't. I was very sad, but the Dreaming Tree is no longer, but they do have a piece of the Dreaming Tree on display at the museum, and they did preserve it, so I don't know if it's lacquered or how exactly it's preserved, but this piece is preserved, so you can, like Tag said, you can, you know, gently touch. You're not supposed to sit on it or do anything crazy, obviously, but so I went and stood next to it, and I don't know what happened, but the whole thing kind of shifted, and I panicked. I thought, I was like, oh, no, don't let me be the person to, yeah, it's a fun photo. We'll leave it at that. Maybe we'll have to share it in the host notes or something. But after my panic attack there with the Dreaming Tree branch, we actually were walking back to the Airbnb to grab the car to go out to the Walt Disney Farmhouse. But we stumbled upon another Disney history piece, which is the Coca-Cola wall, basically. And it's been... So what was the story with the Coca-Cola wall? Do you remember, Tag?
All I remember from the Coca-Cola wall that I learned while we were in Marceline that I thought was cool was at the very top of this... Well, first of all, for years, there was another building built in front of this. Mm-hmm. And when they... When that building got taken down, this wall was still back there, preserved really well. And what makes it super Disney related is at the very top of this Coca-Cola painted sidewall billboard kind of thing, it was Hutchinson's Furniture and Undertaking. And Walt and Roy worked together at this undertaking place. And the story we learned was that Roy was doing the work while Walt would lay in the coffins and sleep and play dead. So I thought that was really funny that that was related to this, you know, billboard that they had found. So we, of course, took a picture in front of it.
The other thing, too, is the building and the Coca-Cola ad actually dates back to 1906, which was the year that Disney moved to Marceline. So that's one of the things that's significant. But then also in 1955, when Walt was, of course, designing and building Disneyland, he was drawing from different memories of his from Marceline, and he actually asked that Disneyland's Coke Corner be modeled after the Zurcher building, which was the Coke Corner of his childhood. So this was where, the tie with modern day Disneyland is this Coca-Cola wall was the inspiration for Coke Corner. But in December of 2015, the Coca-Cola company gifted a newly painted sign to the Walt Disney Company in recognition of the 60-year partnership. So it is not the original painting on this wall, but it looks great.
Now, one of the things, we talk about all these things in this episode. I'm going to put a link in the show notes. DowntownMarceline.org, there's a tour page.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a link to all the different places. And when you click on the different places, like this Zurcher building one, there's actually a little audio clip at the top that you can play that kind of talks about some things. And there's some paragraphs and stuff that talk about it. So if you can't make it to Marceline, I highly recommend going to this website and just clicking around and reading about it, because it sounds like it'd be really boring, but it's super interesting.
Well, moving on. So next stop on our tour was the Disney Family Farmhouse. Now, the home is currently a private residence, so there are not tours of the home itself. And they do ask everyone to be respectful that this is someone's home currently, so no walking up to the front door and peeking in the windows or anything like that. You know, be respectful.
There is a sign to read.
Yep. There's a sign that you can pull off the road, and there's a sign, and they kind of have a couple benches right there too. So there is a sign talking about the family farmhouse. You can take pictures from the end of the driveway of the farmhouse, but the farm, I mean, it's been kept up beautifully. It did say that there has been a couple of modifications since the Disney's owned the farmhouse, but not tons, actually. The home still comprises the largest section of the current layout. There was an addition that was added in the 80s to accommodate the needs of its current owner. So most of the home is the original 1906 home. So that was cool. So we took some photos there, of course, because that was what we were doing. We were being Disney tourists, taking all sorts of photos. And then behind the Disney home is the Disney Family Farm, which this was really cool. There's this space the public is invited to go and explore. Even though this is privately owned by the homeowner, it is a space, and it is open for all of us Disney enthusiasts to go check out and hang out. So there was this really nice, there was like a gravel pullout that was like a parking area, this little walking trail back there. So the first thing that we actually came upon while we were walking this little path was the son of the Dreaming Tree. So again, like I said before, unfortunately, the Dreaming Tree, Walt's Dreaming Tree, no longer stands. It was, I can't remember what the whole thing was, but we'll get to it. We'll talk about my reaction. But the first thing we came upon was the son of the Dreaming Tree. So this is a sapling that was planted by Walt's grandson, Bradford Disney Lund, with the assistance of Walt Disney World ambassadors Sarah Spike, Juan Aviles, and Christopher Stewart. And the cool thing here was soil from the Magic Kingdom and water from the Rivers of America were mixed with the soil from the farm during the planting ceremony. So I thought that was really cool. Tag made fun of me because we went and visited the next day before we left, and I gave the son of a Dreaming Tree a hug, and he's like, why are you hugging the tree?
We went to leave, and I was like, you were like, take a picture, and I took a picture of you, then I was like,
and I just stood there.
No, in my mind, I was like, she's going to hug the tree. And then she's like, here, get a picture of me hugging the tree. And I'm like, there she is. She did it.
And then I like wouldn't stop hugging it. And you're like, what are you doing? I'm like, I can feel the magic tag.
And I
it was a
off.
Very comforting tree hug. I tried to get you to hug the tree as well, but it obviously to no avail. It didn't work.
No.
So
no.
After the Son of the Dreaming Tree. So the Son of the Dreaming Tree is kind of, you can't miss it. It's basically the middle of the pathway.
It is.
Then off to the left, just past the Son of the Dreaming Tree, is the spot where the original Dreaming Tree had once stood. This was the biggest. I was so sad about this. Just so, so sad. So I'm
still sad about this.
I am still sad about this. I knew that the Dreaming Tree was no longer standing. However, what I did not realize, if it weren't for this sign, you would never have known that there was a tree in the spot that it was. That was the thing that was the most sad to me. I thought that there'd be a stump or something. I thought there'd be a stump is what I thought we would see, is the stump of the former Dreaming Tree, but there wasn't even a stump. So I was very sad about this. But what's so important about the Dreaming Tree and why we're getting a Dreaming Tree in our new reimagined version of Toontown is this is where Walt as a kid would go. And this was kind of his his adventure spot. And this would be this place, like this was like Walt's thinking spot or his dreaming spot. And he called it his Dreaming Tree. So he would go out there and just sit under this tree and dream all of his big dreams and decide what, you know, think about all the amazing things he was going to do when he was older. So that's why it was so cool and so special. So it was kind of like where the magic began, I guess.
But the line that is on this placard, I think, or this sign that's by there, I think is the most like amazing.
Oh, yes.
Walt Disney often credited this exact location as the birthplace of his creativity. Yes. Wow. Somebody like Walt Disney, this is where it all started. It's amazing to be in a place like this that inspired somebody who's made such an impact on the world. You know, it's just crazy.
Incredible. It really is incredible.
I also want to say that I commented to Teresa that they have a picture of Walt and Roy visiting this tree sometime in the 60s, I want to say. And you would not know that that area was the same because there is so much stuff grown up around it now that it is crazy. It was like a field back then, but it is now like lush foliage everywhere.
The other cool thing that we learned was that Walt's Dreaming Tree was a cottonwood tree, and a cottonwood tree typically has a lifespan somewhere between 70 and 100 years old. Well, Walt's Dreaming Tree lived to be over 120 years old before it was struck by lightning in 2008. And then the remains of the tree eventually blew over during a fierce windstorm on May 28th, 2015. See, but I still thought that there was going to be a stump, but it was just a hole in the ground. So I, like, my heart broke a little when I saw that because I thought we would see a little bit more than what we saw. So that's why I gave the Son of the Dreaming Tree an extra long hug. But Walt's Dreaming Tree was officially registered as a historic tree by American Forest. So that's kind of cool, too. Did not know that fun fact until we went and visited.
So as you go down the path here, they actually have Walt's, okay, so let me preface this. There is Walt's barn. It was not the original barn. It was built by volunteers in 2001 to help celebrate Walt's 100th birthday. Mm-hmm. It was constructed using blueprints that Walt had commissioned for his Holme Hills workshop. Inside the building, they leave pens in there, like permanent markers, that you can go in and anywhere inside the building only, in the barn, you can write letters to Roy, or not to Roy, to Walt, and just letters of encouragement to other people and stuff like that. So there are a ton of signatures and stuff for people. And of course, Teresa and I left DL Weekly in there, in addition to some other people we saw that we know from the community who had also been there and written stuff. So very, very cool.
It was really cool. So all of the places that we visited, we were there on a weekend, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like a day at Disneyland. It wasn't tons of people all over the place. It was really nice because when we were back, you know, in, you know, by the Dreaming Tree and back at Walt's barn, we were the only people back there for quite a long time. Yep. And same thing at the museum. We had lots of space. It wasn't like you were having to move around all sorts of other people to kind of see this stuff. So not seeing a ton of people around when we were visiting and exploring Marceline that day didn't, you know, made me kind of wonder how many people make this journey to go see, you know, the history of Walt's childhood and kind of see, you know, learn more about the history of Walt and not just the history of, you know, Disneyland or the Disney company. But by golly, when you walk into that barn and you're trying to find some tiny sliver or speck that you could maybe squeak your name into, holy, I was just blown away by the amount of signatures and messages and all of these different things in this. I mean, it was amazing. There was not a clear space anywhere. It took us a while to find a place to write our names.
Yeah, it was definitely a challenge to find a spot, that's for sure. So after the barn, where we hung out for a little bit, we went to go visit the Walt Disney Elementary School, because this was another spot that was a little off the beaten path. So we had, again, it was pretty walkable for a lot of stuff in the middle, but we decided the barn was far away, the elementary school is far away, and then the pool was far away. So we kind of went to see all of these locations. One of the neat things that's at the Walt Disney Elementary School is the official Olympic flagpole that was used at Squaw Valley, California, for the Winter Olympics that were held in February of 1966, I think it's, I'm trying to read from the plaque here. 1960? I think it's 1960, where Walt Disney was the chairman of pageantry. How cool would it be to have an elementary school that your flagpole was one that was used in the Olympics? That is so cool. Now,
yeah,
inside this school, there are a lot of Disney characters in a few of the areas. So right in the front entrance, there's a whole wall of Disney characters. But that was overshadowed for us by the fact that there is this amazing, like, floor feature, I guess you would call it, that is inset in the tile of the floor of Mickey Mouse. And it looks so cool.
What a magical place to go to elementary school, because all of these Disney characters, interesting because there's history tied to it. It's not just things that they bought and put up on the walls and ta-da, Disney characters. No, these are actually things that Disney artists from the Walt Disney Animation Studios created specifically for the school. So they have, like Tag mentioned, there's a bunch of Disney characters in like the front lobby or the front entrance area of the school. And then also there's some Disney characters up on the walls in the gymnasium as well. I think it's really cool that they kept this all there. And I think it's really cool that the school itself still has what looks to be the original elementary school signage on the front of the building. And, you know, they haven't forgotten. Again, they're very connected to the history and they haven't forgotten the history. And they haven't just like updated it because maybe these things look a little dated or anything like that. They're very proud of this. And I think that's so cool that they're kind of keeping the history alive and keeping the tradition alive for years to come. I mean, I'm sure if you were someone young growing up and went to Marceline, it may not be too amazing to, you know, that's just your elementary school is Walt Disney Elementary. But for us Disney fans, this is such a cool, interesting piece of history.
Yeah. After the elementary school, we went up to the Walt Disney Municipal Park, which includes the pool that they dedicated, and there used to be a country club and stuff there. So neat kind of thing at the other end of town from the barn and the property where he lived. There's also this, after that we kind of drove back into town, there is a huge mural on the wall that says Welcome to Main Street USA and has a quote from Walt Disney and has some things painted on it that represent all of the things about Marceline and the surrounding area that really kind of make it unique. There's a water tower. There's a police car, which I thought was great after we had met the sheriff. You know, there's Walt's barn. There's the Casey's. There's the grocery store. There's, of course, all of Main Street. Just a lot of things painted into this that made it really neat. So we did our streams after that, and that night...
Oh, yeah. If you're interested, we did do our live streams last month from Marceline, and we did try and take people around with us as we kind of did a little tour of the town. So if that is something you're interested in and you'd like to kind of see some of the things that we're talking about, be sure to go to our YouTube channel and check that out. It is open for anyone to watch, so it doesn't matter if you're an official supporter or if you're just a listener. Everyone's invited to watch, so we hope you enjoy those. We had a lot of fun doing them.
Yeah. So that night we went to, there was a new pizza place in town. It was a big deal. It was really nice. They had a cool pizza oven. The pizza was good. The staff was nice. The atmosphere was really cool. We sat next to, there was, I think the next town over had like some festival or something going on, so we ended up sitting at a table or next to a table with this mom and her two young kids that had face paint and stuff on, and they They were adorable.
So fun.
And then I thought this was amazing. So next to our Airbnb, there was a little park, and it was lit up really beautifully.
It was so great
because Teresa needed to read for the book club, and I needed to do some grading for my classes. And so we sat on these two little benches, and we just enjoyed the atmosphere of Marceline. The weather out was pretty decent. I got some pictures of Teresa sitting reading. She ended up moving off the bench, which was a little less than sturdy, let's say. And she sat up against one of these poles, and I got a candid picture. And then all of a sudden, this random dog shows up and comes right up to Teresa and is like, hey, pet me, lays down, chilling out until somebody goes walking down the street and then decided, we're moving on. It was definitely somebody's dog.
Yeah, it was definitely someone's pet. He had been like freshly bathed or something because he was so soft and so sweet. That was a very magical and unexpected moment in Marceline, that's for sure.
Definitely.
I just hope he made his way home.
I hope so too. I hope somebody got him where he needed to go.
Yeah.
I think that was pretty much our tour of Marceline.
That did. Yeah. The only thing was the next morning was Sunday morning, which unfortunately meant our favorite restaurant, Ma Vic's, was not open on Sunday. So we weren't able to have one last meal at Ma Vic's. So we hit the road, but before doing so, I told Tag that I wanted to go visit Walt's barn and the Dreaming Tree site again. So we went out there, took some more photos. It was just so beautiful back there and so calm and relaxing. That would have been a good spot to sit and like read the book, because it was just so, I don't know, there was just like something in the air back there. It was just really, really cool. I really just enjoyed being back there. And that's when I gave the son of the Dreaming Tree the hug that I think Tag maybe will never let me down. Let me live down, but that's okay. I stand by my decision.
Yeah. The other thing I just want to point out, so on our way home, we stopped to use the restroom in this random place. And Teresa's like, why do I know this place? And turns out that we, just by happenstance, pulled off in Riverside. Where were we? Riverside. I don't know what state we were in, but Riverside, Iowa. And that, for your Star Trek fans, is the birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk.
The future birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk.
And Teresa was like, we have to go see it. So we drove into town. We saw the future birthplace.
Endlessly amused by this.
There was a statue of James T. Kirk in the park that we took a picture with. There was a museum that had like a Enterprise in the parking lot that was interesting. There was some stuff around their post office that was...
Yeah, they had like Star Trek stamps that must have been issued there, because they had all different stamps. It was an unexpected, fun little like right place, right time kind of thing.
It was, we did not plan it.
No.
We didn't even know it was there. We just got off and Teresa's like, this place seems familiar. Why do I know this place? And I'm like, I don't know, Teresa.
I still don't know why I'd heard of it before, but
you're not even a Star Trek fan.
No, I'm not. So I saw it somewhere at some point and it just was lived in the back of my brain. But yeah, that was just hilarious. The thing that I think was the best was after we left Riverside was I decided to do some research, because we had nothing better to do than to sit in the car for however many hours it was going to be until we were home. So I was doing some research to figure out, why is Riverside, Iowa, the future birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk? And I don't know what was more interesting, was visiting Riverside or the story behind why Riverside is considered the future birthplace. It was there basically... You can look it up. I do not remember the gentleman's name, but there was a councilman that was a big Star Trek fan. And it was referenced somewhere that Captain James T. Kirk was going to be born in a small town in Iowa. And this man decided, I live in a small town in Iowa. Why not this be the small town in Iowa? And so he just kind of declared that it was going to be his town. And the town just embraced it and went with it. And so this is not something that like Star Trek promotes, and it's not something that Star Trek, the franchise, gives them money to do or anything. This is all just this town embracing this idea. And it ended up coming full circle. And in one of the more recent Star Trek movies, they do specifically say that it is Riverside, Iowa, that is the birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk. And the thing that was so cool was, the guy that started this out originally was still alive, so he got to see this whole thing come full circle. So I thought that was just the most interesting and unique story, and that just made that was like the cherry on top to the whole experience. It was so fun.
Yes, it was ridiculous, but yes, definitely added some fun. And it's a great story, of course, to tell. So long story short, everybody, we highly recommend that if you are able,
oh my gosh, yeah,
go to Marceline, Missouri. The people there are amazing. Mm-hmm. We talked to the people who run the museum for a little while. We're hoping to have them on as a guest in the future. Very friendly. It was kind of funny because the lady at the front that sold us our tickets, we went into the first room and they have these videos playing in the different rooms. And I was like, I turned to Teresa, I said, is that the lady who just sold us our ticket is on this video? And sure enough, it was.
It was so
cool. And just like, you know, you'll see this, like Teresa said, you'll see some things in our YouTube live video if you go watch it. Just like Disneyland, they sold bricks outside the museum to be able to support the museum a little bit. And there were people from all over the place that had bricks there. So
there were.
We are considering getting a brick possibly there, but we just haven't done it yet.
I think we need to. It's so cool. So cool. So anyways, we hope you all enjoyed our trip report from Marceline, Missouri. It, again, like Tag said, highly recommend going at least once. Something to put on your Disney bucket list for sure. It was very magical in its own way.
Definitely worth it for sure.
It's okay. I'll be the only weekly tier without an answer. Make sure you send your questions to Producer James or Producer Vern at trivia@doweekly.net.
All right. Welcome back to Trivia Land. I know you two are feeling a little down on yourselves, but you know, you might surprise yourself. You might not. You might know exactly what's coming. But maybe the listeners are feeling good, and we'll give them the answers right now. First question, which tree is taller, the one on Main Street or the one on Buena Vista Street?
The one in your heart, James. That's my answer.
Oh, that's cute. But this is not a trick question. One of them is indeed taller by 10 feet. The one on Main Street is taller. Congratulations, Tag.
I thought so.
Yep. The one on Main Street, 60 feet tall. The one over Buena Vista Street's about 50 feet tall.
Oh, you know what it is? The one on Buena Vista Street, it's like on a raised thing.
Yeah,
It's not 10 feet, but I forgot about that one too.
Question number two from listener Donna S. How many poinsettia and other holiday plants are around the Disneyland Resort when they decorate for the holidays? We got a estimated number of about more than 25,000. So no points.
Wow.
Dang, I was going to say 25. And then I was
what
like,
did I say the first
low.
Time?
You said 10. 10, then 100, then 80.
I said 10. 10 was not bad.
I might have considered a half point, but it's still off.
Yeah, that's less than half.
Yeah, wouldn't have been a great guess. So they have definitely been upping the number. I think a couple of years ago, it was 10,000 of both poinsettias and other plants that I don't remember the name of. So there are lots of plants. Those horticulture folks are busy.
Yeah, just think of how many
poinsettias. There has to be an army of
them. I'm thinking about, right, just like, in Disneyland, just off the top of my head, we've got poinsettias like swirling next to the Mickey floral.
Right.
And then just Main Street, you've got
there's a bunch on the around the flag, I think, and there's some in the hub.
Yep.
And
yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be the person that actually has to count how many there are.
No.
Our third question this week, what scent is pumped onto Main Street during the holidays? Tracy, you shouldn't have changed your answer. It's peppermint.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to pay attention. I got two. Being minty.
Two out of three so far.
And the last
it's
question.
Your week, Tag.
I gotta have
I
one every year.
I don't feel good about this question, so I'm just gonna mark an X on your answer.
Yes. Oh yeah, I'm sure.
The one I was pretty certain was gonna stump you, but being ready to be surprised.
We're gonna smack ourselves when he says it.
No, you won't. What is the name of the proprietor of Plaza Point, the Disneyland Holiday Shop, a place to get your Christmas and holiday fix year round? Her name is Miss Evelyn Toro.
Yes. Evelyn.
Which I laughed because I'm like, oh, if you shorten Genevieve, it could be Eve, and you could short Evelyn to Eve. Bit of a stretch, but...
Wow.
Yeah. Great, great story about the naming and everything behind it. So, nice way to leave a legacy.
Good questions. Fun questions.
And you got to learn something, Teresa.
A lot,
four
apparently.
Things.
Yeah, I learned a lot tonight.
You love learning. You second-guessed yourself too many times. That's what happened this time. You would have gotten two as well.
I second-guessed myself once.
Oh, no, because you said Buena Vista was confidently. That's right. Yep.
Oh, but you were talking about the plants and guessing that you were saying around 25,000
at 1.2.
That's true.
You
were so close.
I did bump up my plant guess. So I may have talked myself out of the plants, but that's okay.
My plan worked. I said 100,000 and got you panicky.
So did you enjoy our holiday-themed questions this week? Do you want to give producer Vern and I the gift of more holiday questions we can ask TNT? You know our email. It's trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, we'll be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us. And we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.